This is the Jabberjaw Podcast Network.
I'm sick with this, I'm sick with this. Since you wasn't the button, I just missed my own sweet time. Didn't teach what it felt. I didn't recognize simple things anymore. I don't want to be defeated. I don't want to be defeated. I don't want to be defeated.
Hello, everybody. Welcome to another episode of Lead Singer Syndrome, a podcast where I, your host Shane Told, speaks to other front men, or in this case, front women, of professional rock and roll bands. Greetings from Singapore. That's right. After about 24 hours of travel, actually, I think it was further because I drove through this insane snowstorm from Windsor, Ontario to Toronto. It was supposed to take like 3 hours and change, and it was the worst snowstorm ever. About 6 hours in the car, like, you know, hands at 2 and 10, clenching the wheel, hoping that we don't die. It was not great, not a great experience, but I'll tell you, man, being here now, beautiful weather outside, palm trees. I love Singapore. I'm so excited to be back here. What am I doing here? Well, it's a bit of a vacation, but also I am performing at one of my sinner's weddings. Going to be very cool. I'm playing a bunch of Silverstein songs and some cover songs, and it's going to be my first Chinese wedding. I am very, very excited about that. And shout out to Mr. Rainer Ho. And congratulations on the wedding. Very happy I could be here. Also, if you're listening to this and you happen to be in Singapore tonight, I will be at Emo Night Singapore DJing and also playing a bit of an acoustic set as well. So yes, I'm excited and I love this. And I am still taking time out of my vacation to record this intro for you and put together this podcast. Today, we have a great episode with a guest a little more under the radar. You might not know everything that she's up to, but let me tell you, Lauren Babich has one of the greatest voices in the scene, one of the greatest screams in the scene as well. And yes, she is a woman, but don't let that deter you, any aspiring female screamers out there, because she is ferocious. Absolutely incredible. So it was so nice to talk to her about her project Crazy 88, which is a bit of a super group featuring Jared Alangi, everyone, you know, YouTube's own, comedy's own Jared Alangi, who I also did a bonus episode with. If you're a member of the Lead Singer Syndrome All Access Club, you know all about that. And also the band features Patty Walters of As It Is, big, big, big friend of the show. He plays bass in the band. So a very, very cool project. They have a new record out now. It is very, very, very underrated. It is a 14-track record full of bangers. I'm going to play one later. Yeah, so that is what we have in store on this fine Tuesday. I think it's Tuesday. I don't know, man. It's like Wednesday here or some shit. I don't know. I'm in the future, baby. Future's great. Don't worry. It's awesome. All right. Well, hey, before we get into that, got to give a big shout out to our sponsor, Rockabilia, once again, for just being the biggest sweethearts ever. Thank you, Frankie, once again. Make sure you check them out, rockabilia.com. Use promo code PCJabberjaw to save 10% off your entire order today. What else? You want to get in touch with me? Please do that. Email me, leadsingersyndrome@gmail.com. Follow us on social media. If you got suggestions for guests or anything at all, feel free to hit me up. That's right. So I'm on vacation. I'm taking a little time off, but I am doing, you know, some thinking, some focusing on the podcast and everything. So any suggestions that you may have, 2019, it's going to be a big year. It's going to be a big year for me. It's going to be a big year for you. Already, we're what, a month and a half in? And it's killing it. It's just so good. Also, I want to thank everybody that sent me birthday presents. Oh my God, I got some really cool stuff. I got a record player. That was awesome. I got a couple cool cookbooks. It was just really, really great. I also got a barbecue. That was probably the sweetest thing. Going to need that this summer. Don't need it yet. Anyway, hey, let's get into this week's episode and my conversation with Lauren Babich of Crazy 88 and Red Handed Denial.
I make it. That's the point of breaking. What's right is right, but here tonight you'll lie. 6 feet under.
Hello, Lauren.
Hey, Shane. How are you?
Hey, really well. How are you?
I'm great.
Awesome.
I'm good. Can you hear me okay?
Oh, yeah. You sound great.
Awesome. I'm kind of setting up like a better microphone for this so you get decent audio.
Yeah, I appreciate that. Sometimes it can be, the struggle can be very real. You know, over on my end. It's okay, though. You know, it's not so much the sound I find usually. It's like... it's just when the connection like keeps dropping. If somebody's on like a bad Wi-Fi connection or whatever,
yeah.
And then oh my god, sometimes it's like we have to start like restart the call, you know, like 10, 15 times during the.
Oh my gosh!
I know it's awful, but you sound great.
Okay, hopefully I won't have any dropouts.
All good.
I mean, yeah. Okay, let me know.
No, this is great. So I'm here with Lauren Babich of oh my god, so many things. and there's so much going on right now. You must be very busy.
I am very overwhelmed with everything that's going on, but it's been amazing. I wouldn't have it any other way.
it seems like, you know, when it pains it roars, you know, it seems like all of a sudden out of nowhere, you've got this Crazy 88 thing coming out. Red Handed in Denial has a new single now out. Is constantly doing stuff. Your YouTube channel is like popping off bigger than it's ever been. It's just like crazy, right? It's like, couldn't we just, you know, spread this stuff out a little bit more?
I know. It kind of worked out that way. And after the Crazy 88 record kind of got pushed back.
Yeah, right.
And, you know, it the cards kind of fell how they fell. And the Red Handed record kind of got pushed back as well due to just production issues and all that kind of thing, and those things were out of our control too. So we were kind of at that point where we're like, how long do we wait after the Crazy 88 record to put this thing out? And we were just like, let's keep the momentum going.
Yeah, it's hard, right? It's hard to know what to do, you know, because then obviously if you put everything out, you know, in one, let's say, 3 month period, then it's like, okay, well then what do we do for the next like 2 years or whatever?
I mean
these days everything's changed so much, and I love to talk to you about that kind of thing too sometime
for
over
sure.
The course of this call, because the music industry has changed and you are like living proof of that, you know.
It's
that
so
you
true.
Don't need to do things indefinitely in a traditional fashion, which is, you know, make a demo tape and then wait for Sony to call. You know what I mean? Like that just does, that is so, it's laughable now to think that that's the way people existed for decades.
I know. And I think the internet is just the cause of all this. Cause
oh,
I
sure.
think like this whole thing about instant gratification and people wanting more and more and more. And it's so difficult to just look back and say, wow, I've done a lot and let's just ride this wave. But people just keep demanding more and more, and then you kind of get in this groove where you just want to do more and more, and I think that's what's happening, and it's been great so far, so I can't really complain.
No, I mean, it favors people that have great work ethics. See, I don't have a very good work ethic at all. I'm like, I'm pretty bad, so for me it's like, okay, I'll put out a record every 2 years. Like I write like 4 songs an album, so I write like 2 songs a year. So I'm really slow, you know, with stuff like that. But then, right, like these days, what you're talking about, there's so much to be expected. It's like, okay, when's the new single? There's going to be a new single. Like, you haven't put out a single in like a month. Where's the new single? Or you haven't updated your YouTube channel like in
a week
or something. What's going on? Where are you? Are you okay? You know,
and, like my YouTube's really bad. Like I'll admit it. Like I'm not. It's tough because I'm kind of on in this gray area of like YouTuber, but also in a bunch of like bands and original projects. So it's been really tough to commit fully to YouTube. So I've kind of been using it as something to just throw up covers once in a while if I have time, but I've pretty much just dedicated things to the original music and
totally.
The bands.
And I hear that a lot, you know, Patty Walters, your bandmate and a good friend of mine who's been on the show twice. You know, he was a YouTuber and he pretty much just quit cold turkey and dropped the whole thing and, you know, to start as it is. And obviously that's been very successful for him. And your other bandmate, Jared Alonji, he is also like, he was kind of trying to ride that YouTube also, you know, doing music seriously or, well, sort of not seriously, but regardless, outside of the YouTube, you know, structure. And now he's pretty much dropped that. And that's kind of where you find yourself. But my question to you is, how come so many people don't think they can do both? Why do you have to kind of pick one or the other?
I think it's just the creative reservoir that we have, at least for me. Like, I find I don't want to spread myself too thin and kind of sacrifice any quality that might come from just trying to do everything. So I've been kind of working on not stressing myself out and not putting out something because I feel like I have to, but it's more so if I feel like doing it and if I feel that it's really good, then I'll absolutely do it. But as far as YouTube goes, like I, from my experience and I've seen success from it, I find the quality is better than the quantity, at least for me.
Yeah. No, I think that's a great, you know, a great mantra there. Absolutely. So, so thanks again for taking the time to do this and to talk to me. And I always love to talk to people that are from Toronto area, because that's where I grew up as well. So why don't we start there? I'd love to know more about, you know, kind of your background and I know you got a bachelor of education, like you're actually educated, you know, you know things, you're smart.
I know stuff.
Yeah, stuff and things.
Hopefully.
I always think it's great to hear everybody's story of where they came from, but especially when it's somebody that's, you know, grew up in my own backyard, you know, for me, it's even more interesting.
Yeah, so I was born in Toronto at, you know, Toronto General. And I grew up in the Italian area at St. Clair and Dufferin. So,
oh, yeah? Okay.
Yeah, I lived there till I was 5 years old. And my parents kind of put me in piano at the Royal Conservatory. So we would kind of TTC there every Saturday when I was like 2 years old because they knew, you know, oh, my daughter's banging on pots and pans. I should probably put her in music. So, we would go to the conservatory every Saturday, and then I got into piano. And we kind of moved to the suburbs in, like, York region on my fifth birthday, actually.
Oh.
Okay. To
That's
Aurora.
Not a great birthday.
No, it wasn't a great birthday.
To Aurora. Like, okay, Aurora. All right. Yeah,
yeah, Aurora / Newmarket.
Yep.
So I spent the majority of my life there. And, you know, it was at least musically really weird because I think my parents wanted me to do it as a hobby. And I secretly knew that I didn't want it to be a hobby. So I guess the majority of my childhood was kind of fighting with myself of what I wanted to do and trying to make everyone around me happy. And, you know, so I did go to school. I went to U of T in Toronto for my bachelor's. And like, I guess throughout my 20s, like my late teens and my 20s, I was just constantly fighting with myself. Like, what do I want to do? And my parents kind of weren't really supportive of the music thing. And I don't think they are to this day. Like, they kind of constantly remind me, like, okay, like, you know, you're making this metal music. Is it going to allow you to make a career and make money? So I think they're kind of still worried about it.
Well, yeah. I mean, and what you do, I mean, we're not going to gloss over your talent and your skills, especially in terms of screaming. I mean, you're one of the greatest screamers, I think, that's out there, and you also happen to be a woman. So, you know, you put those things together, and I can understand where it's not, like, from your parents' perspective, you know, it isn't something that's like, oh, yeah, you know, my daughter does this music, and then it's like, oh, can I hear it? And you're, like, full on,
no.
You know, screaming. Like, that might not be something, you know, your mom is necessarily, I don't want to say she isn't proud of you or whatever, but, you know, to bring that up when she's having, a tea date with her friend, you know, or whatever. I could definitely see your parents really not getting it.
Yeah, and they absolutely, I truly don't think my mom does. Like, she tells me, like, what is going on here? Like, I have no idea. Because I grew up, I'm Italian. So my grandparents are Italian immigrants. So we have a quite a traditional Italian family, which makes things a little more difficult, I think.
I would have, with your last name being Babich, I thought maybe you were like Croatian or Serbian or something. Yeah, okay.
Yeah, so the last name comes from my grandfather on my dad's side, obviously, right. And he's from Croatia. So I'm kind of quarter Croatian, three quarters Italian.
Uh-huh,
but the Italian culture is kind of what my family has been
totally,
all about.
Totally.
So yeah, it's been a difficult thing with my family. So
when you were growing up, what was it like? I understand you have, you talk about your parents and your grandparents. Did you have brothers and sisters? Like, who did you live with? Yeah.
Yeah. So I have one sister. She's a lot younger than me. She is 8 years younger than me. So she's turning 20, and she's like literally the smartest person I've ever met.
Well,
like,
that's great.
She's like the best. She's probably going to be like some doctor and cure cancer or something. Like, she's that smart. And I think that was also like a big contrast in my family, because I was always kind of the black sheep. You know, when I was growing up, I was like the emo kid.
Right.
And my parents are just like, are you like, what's going on? Like, are you okay? And, you know, I would kind of bottle myself up. And you know, my sister was a big contrast of that. Like, I find her to be quite kind of normal, you know? So it was just an interesting contrast.
No, totally.
Family dynamic.
Totally. So you say you were like an emo kid. So in high school, I mean, obviously if you ended up going to U of T, University of Toronto, which is a very good school, you must have done pretty well in high school and stuff. What was it like for you kind of with your high school group of friends or whatever? What did you guys get up to? And then obviously that's usually the age when people start, you know, singing in bands, forming bands and mm-hmm. all that too. So how'd that all happen?
Yeah. Like, my group of friends, like, I kind of hung out with them since elementary school, and we kind of grew up together, and we were kind of the group that listened to, like, you know, the cool scene music at the time, like, Panic at the Disco, Taking Back Sunday, like, that kind of thing. Chiodos was a big one
right,
for us.
Sure.
So, you know, like, we were that group, and I just wanted to be in it at all times. Like, I would go to shows, local shows. Some, like, ska was pretty big at that time. And yeah.
Well, we're in Canada. Ska will always be pretty big in Canada for some reason.
I know, like, you know, like the Johnstones, the Flatliners, like those were bands that, like, we loved, and we loved ska so much that we started a ska band. So I played trumpet in high school.
Oh, cool.
And yeah, so it was like six of us or something, and the band was named Dinosaur Roar.
Dinosaur and Roar.
I know, it's just...
It's not that bad. That's pretty good. For a ska
horrible.
Band, I think that's pretty good.
You know, and we played like a few, you know, showcases, and we right. did terribly, and the boys wouldn't let me sing, and I really wanted to sing, but, you know, they were just like, I really think that, you know, the guys should sing. And I was like, okay, I'll play trumpet for now. So that was like kind of my first taste of being in a band. And I was 16. I think I was 16. And that didn't last very long because I didn't want to be stuck playing trumpet.
Right, right. So you knew you were a front woman at that point.
I think so. I think I wanted to be the front woman. Or front person or whatever.
Yeah, whatever we're supposed to say.
So it was a really interesting time. So I was like battling with my parents of like, why are you in a band? And I was just like, I'm in a band, but I don't want to be in a ska band. And I want to sing, but I don't have the proper group or the proper people to help me. So it like that really came together when I was in university. Like I met the guys in Red Handed.
Yeah.
And we're not the same lineup that we were in, you know, 2009, but that was like my first true taste of exactly what I wanted.
Absolutely. Yeah. With singing too. I mean, this whole time that you were playing trumpet, not really doing what you wanted to, I assume you were in your bedroom learning your craft of how to sing or how to scream. I don't think it just, you just could do that. There's some work that you put in, right?
Oh yeah. Like I think I really knew that I wanted to like sing / scream in a metal band when I was listening to like Under Oath, The Used, like Burt McCracken's a huge influence for me. So I would listen to kind of those albums and I would try and mimic them. So
right.
And of course, when I was alone, because I was super shy, I was like, I couldn't imagine anyone hearing me right now. Like, I'm mortified. I sound awful. So I kind of did all these things in the privacy of myself. And you know, when I'm in the car or whatever.
Exactly, yeah.
Just kind of singing along to my favorite vocalist.
The car was always my place to practice too. Because I knew nobody could hear when I'm screeching and making terrible sounds, absolutely.
And then like stop at a red light to make sure that no one was watching you.
So that's all it was for you learning, like, because I mean, your screams are, I mean, I'm going to play a song later and I'll play some clips throughout the show, but you know, people will hear you if they haven't already, but your screams are like monstrous.
Thank you.
You know, and I mean, that must have been a lot of trial and error. Or did you also, you know, you talk about the internet. I mean, you're from a generation that actually had YouTube videos where maybe you could figure some stuff out that way. Because I didn't have that, you know, when I was learning to scream.
Yeah, so I guess it was a combination of both. Like I would just see what didn't hurt me. And then just go with that. And then once I had that down, I would kind of hone the tone and the coloring that I wanted. And that took a long time. Like for me, I would say it took about 2 years to really get the screams exactly how I wanted and to get those like diverse pitches that I really right. wanted. And it was a lot of it was trial and error. And a lot of it was like, oh, I've hurt myself. I need to wait like a week to heal and then start again. So it took a long time for me.
Yeah, no, absolutely. It can be scary too sometimes when you lose your voice and like you're like, is it ever going to be the same again?
Yeah.
You know, but hearing you sing, I mean, your singing voice is incredible and very clean sounding too, which is kind of cool, you know, difference between the way you scream and the way you sing. So I guess you're doing something right.
I hope so. I mean, knock on wood, like I haven't really lost my voice in a really long time. And it would be scary on those days when it's like, oh my God, what happened? And it can really get in your head. And that's like, for me, the majority of what singing is, like, it's all like a mental game. Because, like, as soon as you lose that confidence, it takes even longer to get, like, your mental state back. And I don't know if you feel that way, too. Like, most of it's like a mental game, yeah.
Well, that's the thing. When you're on tour and, you know, you've lost your voice or you're sick or anything, right? Like, there's nothing... You just feel like the biggest piece of shit. You just feel completely useless because you have one job. The only reason you're there is to sing, and you just can't do that.
I know, and it's like you feel so naked, and it's like what you do is literally just you.
Yeah.
And when you can't do that, it really sucks.
Yeah. Well, you know, you're always better. You're always better than you think you are, too. You know,
exactly.
I think like you're always because I mean. I think anybody that's, you know, a professional musician at all is you have to be your own worst critic. You know what I mean? You have to be hard on yourself to, you know, to be able to improve, you know? So I think that's definitely true. But yeah, there's been times I've had them, you know, even recently where it's like, oh my God, I just like, I'm not going to hit that note. I can't hit that note, you know, today. And I just hate myself because of it, you know? And it's like, well, what we're doing with our voices, it's not really natural, especially six days a week or sometimes like whatever you have to do in a row. I think we did like on the last tour, we did like 12
out
of 13 days
back?
With shows. Yeah, we just got back about a week ago. So
yeah.
Yeah. So it's crazy. Speaking of touring with Crazy 88, this is a band that has. You know, you're busy, but I mean, Patty Walters is a super busy guy too with what he's got going on with As It Is and, you know, a new record that just came out, 6 months ago. And Jared Alonji is always busy with things too. Are you guys going to be doing some touring, some shows? What's the plan there?
So we knew going into it that it would be really difficult because obviously, like, Patty tours tons. Like, I just saw him on Monday. Like this past week, because they came through Toronto, so hung out. Yeah, they did, and he tours so much. So I think he's like our main person that we have to kind of book around. But it'll happen. Like it's just a matter of when, not if. And I know that we have space in the summer, so I really hope we can play our first show. Like we always kind of joke like. What if our first show is like completely huge and at like some massive festival and it's like totally unfair, but I'm kind of like stoked about it, but I'm also nervous because like we could be like, we've never even practiced together. So it's like, we could be the worst band in the world. We could be.
I mean, I guess. I mean, I guess we should back up for a second and talk about this.
Yeah.
So Crazy 88, this band was formed. I think everybody listening to this knows who the members are and you know what you guys are trying to do, but I have no idea how it came together. There's got to be an interesting story there of how you all know each other. I assume it might have to do with YouTube. But how did it all come together and how did the conversation come that's like, okay, yeah, we're like really doing this?
Okay, so to back it up like even further, I know that Jared and Patty had worked together on YouTube on like Sunrise Skater Kids stuff. So
right.
I'm pretty sure Patty was supposed to be the vocalist of Jared's parody band, but As It Is kind of blew up, so he had to commit to that. So they have a demo floating around YouTube somewhere. Patty is the vocalist and it's like Pop Punk Pizza Party or something. I think that's what it's called.
Right.
So they knew each other a long time ago. Like they've been friends for a long time. I've known Patty from his YouTube days. So kind of when he was doing covers and vlogs. We were supposed to do a cover a long time ago, but I think it was at that point where he was about to leave YouTube.
Right.
So I've known Patty for a long time. So I actually didn't know Jared prior to Crazy 88 personally. Like, I've watched his videos. I don't know who hasn't watched his videos because, like, they're hilarious.
Yeah.
You know? So it kind of all started with an email. And he emailed me really late 2016, I think it was. And he was just, it was a really long, like very professional email. and he was just saying like, I want to start this project that's serious and not a parody. And I've been like, you know, watching your videos for a long time. And he said like, you're the only vocalist that I would really want in this project. So like,
wow.
And this was all in one email and I was just reading it. And I was like, is this real? Like, is this actually real? So I kind of did my background checks and made sure it was like actually Jared. And it was, because, you know, the internet's crazy.
Sure, I guess, yeah, you never know, right?
Yeah, so he was like, I want to start this band that makes songs that revolve around revolves around movies and kind of conceptually draws its inspiration from movies. And I'm all about that. Like, I was immediately like, yes, let's do it. Cool. So we kind of started Crazy 88 with a covers EP and then an original EP. So it was 2 4-song EPs in 2017. And by the time we released those two EPs, Jared and I, and Patty wasn't in the band at that time.
Right.
Jared and I had actually never spoken verbally to each other.
Wow. So it was texting and...
Yeah. Like, two EPs that came together without ever, like, no phone calls, no Skype, just text messages and Facebook messages.
See, a lot of people are probably, like, I understand how that's possible to make music that way, but a lot of people are like, what do you mean? Like, how do you record a project when you, like, have never physically, like, met or are physically together? So how did you actually do that? Like, you were just recording your own vocals based on music that he was sending you?
Yeah, so he would send me the instrumental and, like, the lyrics for the covers, and he would have a rough idea of, like, what the vision was, and I would track everything at my home studio, and it would kind of be like we would just bounce everything back. Like, I would send him the stems and he would come back to me with like a couple edits or whatever. Right. Like, and then it just came together, and it was so weird because like, I'm so used to doing music with like at least with Red Handed, like everything is together, like in person.
Sure.
You know, you jam, you do the thing, and this was so different. Like, collaborations on YouTube kind of happen very similarly, but to make original music was a whole other thing. And it's kind of like the Postal Service, actually. Like, they did the whole like, mailing thing. So that's why the EP is called No Word Spoken, is because we literally never spoke to each other.
That is a funny tidbit. And like, having Jared on here before and talking to him, he's a talkative motherfucker, you know? So I'm really surprised that it shook out that way.
And it's weird because like, he knows exactly what he wants. And, you know, like, juggling two bands, people are like, oh my God, how do you do it? You must be exhausted.
Right.
But like, Crazy 88 is his baby.
Yeah.
So it kind of takes a little bit of the creative off my shoulders.
Yeah, totally.
It works out perfectly. Like, he and our visions are pretty much 99% the same, like frighteningly the same. So we would have these ideas and they would be exactly aligned. So I kind of gained that trust with him because I was like, wow, like, we're pretty much on the same page for everything. So I have no reason to stress about this project. So it just came together.
That's cool. But I think that also teaches you something about yourself too, right? Like, when you're working with somebody that you know is talented and works well, and then you're working on something and you both come to the same conclusion, it's like, okay, then maybe like, I do have a little bit of, you know, maybe I am pretty good at this, you know? I think there's something there too.
Yeah, and it was, the process was just very affirming, at least for me.
Right.
Like, just doing something a little bit different than I had been doing, like making nostalgic, you know, post-hardcore music, like kind of contrasting what Red Handed is all about, which is more like progressive and metal and metalcore influences. So it was like, okay, I can also do this as well. So it was a great learning experience for
totally,
sure.
Totally, totally. Well, I think the Crazy 88 stuff is very, very creative though still. I think it's like really great. I think the full-length record is really, really awesome. And so I guess let's talk about that. I mean, you put out the record. It's been out now for about a month and a half. And it's long. It's got a lot of songs on
it. Very long, yeah.
How did you do that the same way? Was that just the same method as you did with the EPs? Like just send Lauren the vocals and she's going to do it? Or was there more in-person meeting and stuff with that? Because I feel that's a much bigger undertaking.
Oh my gosh, it was huge. So that one was more in person, and I think the Kickstarter campaign really facilitated
that. Over $50,000 you raised for it, right?
Yeah, and honestly, awesome. Like that alone was like, I was like sweating buckets over it. I'm like, Jared, oh my God, like, are we going to do this? And it came really close, but it actually miraculously made it. And that allowed us to do things in person. So Jared kind of did the bulk of the legwork instrumentally, and he would go to Ohio to track all like guitars and bass with Johnny Frank, who did all the engineering, who you should also have on the show. Like, he's actually like amazing. I don't know if you have.
No, I haven't. I know him like from Attack Attack, right? That was his project back in the day, right?
Yeah. And he's like honestly a fantastic producer. He has a really good ear. And so Jared would go there and track everything, and he got the instrumentals to about like 90% finalized. So I went to Ohio in July, and kind of expecting Jared to have done a little bit more of the, you know, vocal writing, because he was like, it's fine, Lauren, it's fine. So I kind of went to Ohio, and he's like, okay, listen, so I have about 15% of this written. So
15, 1-5.
Yeah, 1-5. So we're going to have to just grind it out. And I was like, oh, okay. So I did a little bit more of the writing on the record than I thought, which was amazing. Like, I was very happy to contribute that way. And so basically we would write and finalize the vocals of the song that I would track the next day. So it was 10 days of just 24/7 writing vocals and melodies and finalizing. So we lived in it for 10 days, and it was like amazingly brutal. Like, it was crazy. And like, you know, when you're tracking vocals and singing, generally, like, you want to have practiced it beforehand and kind of digested it in your brain, but it was just write it and go.
You know, I totally get that. And I'm sure some musicians listening to this are going like, oh my God, I can't believe you went through that. But I honestly think sometimes the best shit I've done has been like that. Like where I've written it the night before, or I've written it like, you know, something like that, like a day before, knowing that I have to finish it or I have to track it, because it makes it more real.
It does.
Like there's, because if I were to write a song now and be like, oh, I don't know, I'm like, it's going to come out at some point. Like, am I really going to have the same sort of level of attention to the details? Like, I'm not sure I would. And a lot of times you'll write something, at least this is just me, but you'll write something and it'll be like, okay, well, yeah, like first line's good. Second line's like good. Third line, I don't know. I'm going to keep it for now. I'll change it later. But yeah. then, like, down the road, you just end up kind of not changing it later. Like, you get used to it, even though in the first place, you were never that stoked on it. And because you figured you'd have more time later to do it, then you never changed it. And now you have sort of a mediocre vocal lyric or something, you know, where it's like, all right, I got to do this tomorrow for real. Then every line, every single little thing has to be, you know, perfect, like under a microscope.
Yeah, I think the pressure really helps. And in this case, it was very beneficial for what we did. And some songs just happened so quickly. Like, I think Tears and Rain was one that we literally did that in less than an hour. And
yeah.
And everything we did, it was like, yes, yes, that's amazing, yes. And sometimes songs just happen that way. Like, they just come together so quickly and it just works. And a lot of the record was that. And I think Jared had a lot of the ideas kind of in his mind palace, but but didn't really like lay them down to pen to paper, I guess. And he was kind of wanted my input, because I think like vocalists should have contributions to their own parts, because it kind of naturally is beneficial when it comes from your own brain, and then the voice will just follow, I find.
Yeah, I'd agree with that, sure.
Yeah, and yeah, the vocals just came together. And awesome. Under pressure and under fire, it was crazy.
Do you have a favorite track from the record?
I have a few. I think the one that is not the fan favorite, but is one of my favorites, is Ian Hates Gretchen.
Okay.
Simply because, like, I do things on that song that I've never done anywhere else. Like the gospel thing at the beginning.
Right.
And, you know, the nu metal style, like Fred Durst section in the middle. Like, and when we were writing that one, that was one we were actually very stuck on. And we're just like, wow, this is going to be shit. like everything we wrote, it was like, no, we can't do that. And then it was, we just came up with the idea of like, what if we put gospel inspired vocals at the beginning? Okay. That kind of works. Let's
what an idea
that.
To come up with. Who just all of a sudden comes up with that? That's a very cool idea. Very cool
yeah,
idea.
It was weird.
No, I thought listening to the record, I thought, Nitroglycerin was a banger.
Oh, we knew that one was going to be a single.
Yeah. Like, oh yeah. No, I can tell that one hits real hard. I really like that one.
Oh, and that bass at the beginning, I was just like, yo, this is going to be sick. And we knew even before the vocals were even written that the structure was just like screaming for a single. Like,
yeah. Isn't that funny how that happens? How you can somehow know. And maybe that's like how you're talking about Jared's mind palace and how, you know, he like had an idea of what to do, but he never laid it down. But somehow you were all able to understand what it was going to do. It's like, I think that kind of falls in line with that idea of just hearing music, you almost know what could be a single, even mm-hmm. though there's no vocals on it. You just kind of know what the vocals are going to do as a group. It's weird, right? How that can happen.
Yeah, and especially with us, we just worked together so well off the bat. And like I said, like, it's a little scary. Like, you never know, like, who you're really working with, especially when you meet them from the internet. It's a little different when you like start a band with your friends, like, it's your friend. But it was a little scary how well and how like seamless everything happened.
Awesome.
So,
well,
yeah.
Well, you guys made an amazing record, and you should be very proud.
Thank you.
So what else is going on? I mean, I guess like, if, you know, Red Handed Denial's not touring, Crazy 88 isn't touring yet, what kind of occupies your days? What do you kind of do?
So like, a lot of, well, first off, like, on kind of, I also teach in high schools, so that's also a thing.
You're a high school teacher.
Yeah, so I do substitute teaching.
Okay,
and,
cool.
And last year, I knew that a lot wasn't going on touring wise. So I took a full year contract at a high school. So I was working with special education students. So students with Asperger's and autism and learning disabilities. So that's kind of my other passion, if
Absolutely.
You will.
Absolutely. That's
teaching.
Amazing.
And I'm also qualified to teach vocals in high school. So I've done a little bit of that. So that's kind of what I do if the day is not for music, I'll take a job at a high school
Absolutely.
And do that. Cause I love working with kids and young people. It's one of my passions for sure.
Absolutely. You do teach lessons. I see you have a website, Lauren, I think it's laurenbabich.com, and you actually teach people too if they're interested in that. Is that something that you get a lot of people hitting you up about? Because I imagine once they hear you sing, they want to be like, oh my God, how does she do that?
Yeah, and I do the Skype lesson thing. It's a little bit more difficult on Skype because you never know what microphone they have on their end. But right. Yeah, I do that as well. And you know, if we tour, sometimes I'll do the lessons on tour. And I think teaching is so interwoven with my love for music. And, you know, when I'm old and gray, I think the dream is to kind of bring my love for music and my experiences from that to teaching young people and
Absolutely.
Inspiring them in that way to pursue music. Cause I think a lot of young people now are very discouraged by the landscape of the industry right now. Cause it's very difficult, I think, to get yourself out there and get yourself seen.
Well, it's funny, right? Cause it's easier than it's ever been because, you know, literally you can upload something and anyone in the world can watch it. However, the problem is there's way too much out there now.
Yeah. It's right? Oversaturated.
Exactly.
And you know, you have this ease of access, but everyone is using it. So how do you make yourself stand out? And that's something that I would love to build on and you know, maybe do some seminars in some schools how to grow your brand and how to grow Sure. your business, how to start. Cause a lot of people don't know where to start and it's like a very overwhelming task.
Yeah. Tell me about it. I know. I'm lucky I got in before all this shit got crazy.
Sometimes I wish like I could have been around during the days where you play shows, you meet people, you tour and send your CD demo to whoever and then they share that and then you get a record deal. I almost wish I was around during that time because I've been doing music independently. I've never been signed to any label with any project I've done. And it's like a blessing and a curse because if you're an independent artist, it's like, yes, you have control and ownership over everything you do, but how are people going to take you seriously? It's like, oh, you're not on a label. So why am I even going to look twice at you kind of thing? And it's such a weird, it's like a double-edged sword. Right now.
Totally. Except, you know, you're working with people like somebody like Patty, who obviously is on a label, has been on labels, you know, and like there's a level of, I think, you know, you're going to be taken seriously based on those relationships you have. And I think that people are going to be like, well, you know what? Like this day and age, maybe you don't need that. You know,
my band
just put out a record today, our first independent release we've ever put out. Actually, it's called Redux. So it's just re-recorded, you know, versions of our old songs. But you know, we sat down, we wanted to do this, you know, give our songs a little bit of an update, and it was like, okay, well, I guess we could hit up the labels and put it out, but what's the point, right? Like,
right.
just do it ourselves. And these days, you know, what a label's gonna do, in a lot of cases, isn't really going to translate you know, to that much more on this scale, unless you're talking about trying to get, you know, something on the radio or right. something like that. And, you know, and that stuff's always difficult anyway. So I think the game's changed, the world's changed. And I don't know. I think there's a lot of reasons not to sign to labels. So
for sure. And at least with Red Handed, like we've been approached before and we just found that it was totally feasible for us to do things independently. And then we got like the booking agent, we got the manager and yeah. I think that's really all you need. As long as you have like a team that is willing to work and willing to work together, I think things are totally feasible without a label. And I don't think I would ever sign anything to a label unless it was like that golden deal kind of thing. But that doesn't really happen anymore because I think labels are struggling. Like labels are struggling right now because the independent artist is kind of becoming a thing, I think.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, in some ways the music industry is doing really well again, you know, because the streaming model has really worked yeah. in a lot of cases. But you are right, though, that I mean, it'll never be 1999 again. You know, that's
right.
That's definitely true.
But like vinyls are coming back. Like vinyls are actually back.
Oh, vinyl's back. Vinyl's been
it's
back.
Like
but oh yeah,
super
it's
back.
It's super back. It's super
which is
back.
Hilarious.
Yeah, yeah. Like well, the worst is that cassettes are back. I don't
they
know who
totally
the
back.
Hell wants to listen to a cassette. I hated cassettes back
listen.
Then, and I hate cassettes now. They're terrible.
Like, who's gonna like? I understand the novelty, but how the heck are you gonna listen to it? Like, what store sells? I mean, we sell like they sell the turntables and stuff, but like, who sells cassette?
I don't even know what it's called. I think they sell like a well. I think they sell like Walkmans at like Urban Outfitters.
Do they?
Now. I think so.
Do they really?
I think so.
Oh my God, I'm going to have to actually go look at that because yeah, I'm just curious.
I mean, I'm sure like, you know, if you go up to St. Clair and Dufferin, there's probably like a pawn shop or something up there that has like a shitload of VCRs and cassette players and everything.
Like the yellow Sony Walkmans that they have.
I don't know if they still, like they're that kind, like the yellow Sony Sport Walkmans. I don't think they sell those ones at Urban Outfitters, but I think they sell like a cassette player, you know. That,
oh
you know,
God.
Opens up and yeah, you know, I hated
That's
those
insane.
Things. I hated those things. Ugh. Anyway, so what advice would you give for somebody, you know, I guess, or maybe what's the most common advice that you give to someone that you're teaching a lesson to about either singing or screaming?
A lot of people that I kind of do the lesson thing with, a lot of it is confidence. And that's like kind of the first bridge that they have to cross is like, how do I feel comfortable sharing this with people? And a lot of the lesson, a lot of the times is just us chatting because it's hard. Like if you've never done this in front of anyone before, it can be very vulnerable. So it's, right. Like the whole confidence thing and the mental hurdle that you have to jump over is definitely the first thing I address with new singers is just getting comfortable with yourself to share your voice with others. Like that's the first thing I usually do with my students.
Yeah, absolutely.
'Cause it can, especially if you're wanting to do like recording, like that's a whole other vulnerability. So like live and studio are totally different, like in my yeah. opinion. And those are two skills that a lot of people don't, like a lot of new vocalists don't really know how to sort of adjust to. So it's a lot of it's like chats. In the lessons that I do.
Yeah, of course. So yeah. much of it is that. All right, cool. So what else is going on? There's a new Red Handed Denial single, Clockwork.
Yeah.
It is out now. People can check that out. What else can people, you know, kind of expect? What else is coming up from the wild world of Lauren Babbage?
Well, the Red Handed record comes out on March 29th.
There
and
you go.
That's another 14 song record. And oof. I know, like it's been a lot. So like Burning Alive has 14 songs, and then you, you know, you follow it up with your other band with another 14 songs. So, it's a very heavy album. It's a concept record as well. So it, it's kind of the second half to the EP that we released in 2016, which was called Wanderer.
So what's the basis of the concept, if you can explain it quickly?
Yeah, so I'm really inspired by like anti-heroes and redemption stories, which is why our new record's called Redeemer. Mm-hmm. Not to like not to copy Norma Jean or anything.
Right.
I love them. But it was like the only word that could sum up exactly what this record was. And you know, I play video games, like I love first person story games, so you know, Red Dead Redemption and God of War, and those are stories of characters that due to circumstances like they've had to do really terrible things. Right. And the record is kind of about a person that over time has done really terrible things and has become desensitized, kind of like Breaking Bad. So right. Have you seen Breaking Bad? Like it's it's very much like a Walter White story. So, you know, there's been theories of like, is Walter White evil? Right. Is he good? Did he start good but turn evil?
Sure.
So the record's kind of about this anti-hero that has sort of declined into this world of madness and eventually murder. And due to his like madness, he meets his untimely death. And that's like the Wanderer EP. So Redeemer kind of follows it up as the anti-hero dies, and he sort of comes back as a spirit, and he has to find his way through the underworld. So that's the record.
So when you're writing stuff like that, obviously you're telling a story. You know, it's not really from your own personal experience, or is it in a way that you kind of insert some of your own personal experience into it?
Oh, 100%. Like every song, like is pretty much inspired by personal experience, whether it's been something I've experienced with like mental health or someone that I knew experiencing something like this. So for example, Clockwork, which was the single that we put out, that one's about just the state of our world and how we've kind of become our own destructive. We've kind of been self-destructing a little bit. So we kind of feed off of this like violent and I wouldn't say masochistic, but just the state of our social media, like especially what's happening in the States right now, everyone would rather see each other burn than work together.
Yeah.
And that's pretty much what Clockwork is about. And it's just my anger and despair about the situation. And that's what Clockwork is, but it's also very relevant to the story.
Right.
So like a lot of the songs are very like influenced by things around me.
Cool.
Yeah. So
well, it's
been like crazy experience writing a 14 song concept record.
Yeah. It's definitely, that's a lot to do, especially when you just wrote one, you know, just put one out like a month and a half ago. So March 29th, the record is out. And lots of other things for people to digest if they're so inclined. You're still doing some YouTube stuff and some YouTube covers and everything else. So does that about cover it?
It about covers it.
I think we did the thing.
I guess the only other thing I could say is that I'm probably going to put out a little solo EP later in the year, hopefully.
Okay.
Something totally different.
So is it going to be something a little less metal? Is that safe to say?
I think it's going to be totally pop.
Totally pop. Okay.
Yeah. Like I've been kind of feeling lately, like I'm a huge, you know, Bruno Mars fan.
Oh yeah.
I'm a huge fan of like jazz fusion. So like some of the tracks that I've kind of been working on are very like funky, and some of them are really vibey, kind of like the Weeknd style. So yeah, awesome. That's probably going to happen later this
there
year.
You go. So even more. No
Even
rest,
more.
No rest for the wicked. Well, Lauren, thank you so much for jumping on and talking to me, and all the best with everything.
Thank you so much. I'm a huge fan of the show, by the way.
Thank you. Well, thank you.
I've listened to it all the time.
I'm happy to have you on. That's awesome.
Thank you.
All right. I'll talk to you later.
See ya.
Okay. See ya. So there it is with Lauren. That was cool, huh? She's up to so much awesome stuff. I love that she's teaching high school. Like, do her students know how cool she is? That rules. I want to thank her. I want to thank Jared Alonji also just for coming on the program, chatting about this project and others. If you're not a member of the Lead Singer Syndrome All Access Club and you want to hear that conversation with Jared Alonji, well, you got to join. $6 a month gets you in. It gets you a bunch of swag, a bunch of great stuff, more access to me, more access to a great community of like-minded people and other fans of the show. So check it out, leadsingersyndrome.com/allaccess. And also make sure you guys check out Red Handed Denial, her other band as well, doing awesome stuff. Straight out of T.O., sorry, The Six, whatever we're calling it these days. I love it. All right, before I go and leave you with a tune, I want to say thank you so much for tuning in to this episode. All the other episodes you might have listened to, all that support means so much. Make sure you hit the subscribe button on whatever you're listening to this on. Tell a friend, tell a loved one, join the All Access Club. All that stuff really helps me keep this show going. I got to play this banger. This is my pick. I know there's other great Crazy 88 songs. Check out their new record. It really is awesome all the way through. But I'm going to play this one. It's called Nitroglycerin. Here it is. I'm Lead Singer Syndrome. Peace and love. See you next time. For the blood, and let me taste the blood.